The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
On this episode of Newt's World, my guest today was born to a mother consumed by drugs and raised by his grandmother in poverty on the south side of Chicago. He saw firsthand how lawmakers from both parties have failed African-American voters on issues like poverty, welfare, and education. But as someone who beat the odds growing up under a fear-based mentality that limits what people can achieve, he believes there's another way. He just recently provided congressional testimony to the House Ways and Means Committee's Subcommittee on Work and Welfare, the Dignity of Work Lifting Individuals Out of Poverty. And he is here to discuss welfare reform and how we need to revisit this critical issue. So I'm really pleased to welcome my guest, John O. Caldwell. He is a Fox News analyst, the founder of the bipartisan consulting firm based in Washington, D.C., that provides strategic advice in areas of public affairs and government relations. He's also the author of the book, Taken for Granted: How Conservatism Can Win Back the Americans That Liberalism Failed. And I think of him as a good friend. We've worked together over the years. John O., welcome, and thank you for joining me on Newt's World.
Well, thank you for having me, and it's such an honor to always be with you, as I think you've led groundbreaking change that's helped many across the country, whether it be the Black community, poor white community, or whatever it may be. You've been a change agent for good, and I thank you for it.
Well, you know, in terms of change, you're a personal example. Can you take us back sort of to your childhood growing up on the south side of Chicago? Because there's just a lot about your personal voyage in life that's inspirational and that has a lot of lessons.
Well, thank you. So I grew up extremely poor. At times we had the lights, the gas, and the water off all at the same time. My mom was addicted to drugs, as you mentioned, and we lived in a project until my grandmother one day, who was a private duty nurse, my mom's mom, came and she rescued us from the projects. So we began to live with her, and my grandmother had temporary custody of me and my siblings. And then one day she pulls out the garage and a drunk driver hits her. Apparently this same individual had hit some other folks earlier in the day. So he was a habitual drunk driver and injured her back. She had to go on a reduced schedule, so she couldn't work her regular schedule. She worked overnights. And then ultimately she couldn't work anymore. So from there, we went from having a decent life, certainly better than what it was with my mom, to government checks begin to come again, this time not for my mom, but for my grandmother. So that's when things begin to slide in a very negative way once again. But I'm thankful for God and his guidance, which I believe brought me through.
Given that kind of background, you start volunteering at the local alderman's office at 14. What led you to go to the alderman's office and get involved as a volunteer?
You know, it's interesting. My mom and dad were never married, but my dad would pick me up every Friday and he would take me to his dad's house on Fridays. And on Saturdays, my grandfather would take me to work with him, plumbing, construction, small business. He would pay me $10 a day to hold the flashlight hand tools. And he started me off very young. I was probably about 8 years old when I started going on these job sites, maybe even younger. And he would show me what hard work, a day of hard work looked like. And then he would get the check from the work and he would go and cash it and he would show me the money. You know, back in those days, a lot of the guys that were drug dealers, they would have this wad of cash that they would use to entice young people to come work for them and take on that lifestyle because, of course, most people there were poor. But my grandfather wanted to show me another way. My grandfather, James Earl Williams. So what ended up happening is at 14, we were riding through this area of Chicago called Inglewood, which is one of the hardest hit areas in terms of the drug and violence in the city of Chicago. And as we're riding in this red pickup truck, I look out the window to my right and I see a lady who appears drugged up and beat down. And it brought tears to my eyes because I thought it was my mother. So as we're riding along, I quickly wipe the tears because my grandfather is a Southern gentleman and he's a tough guy. And he notices and he says, "What's wrong with you, boy?" And I say, "This lady." At this point, we're riding past her and I realize it wasn't my mother, but it certainly could have been her. I said, "What can I do to prevent this from happening?" And he began to tell me about the power elected officials have to increase the penalty of law for those who sell and distribute drugs and how they can provide grant funding for those who want to be rehabilitated. So I said, "Okay, I want to be an elected official. I want to know how the system works." And then after I learned a little bit more, within weeks, I'm volunteering for my local alderman's office because I thought that I can help save my mom. And that's really what it came down to. It became a mission out of one moment with my grandfather when he told me the power that elected officials wield to create positive change in people's lives, like you did as Speaker of the House.
So you took this idealistic approach. You were a volunteer. But then at 16, you get a part-time job in the Social Security Administration. And I was told that there was resistance, even in your own family, to you going out and getting a job and earning a paycheck.
That's absolutely right. Initially, they were in favor of it. But when my grandmother saw that the money that I was earning could potentially impact the earnings for the house and perhaps the benefit, she then told me, "You may have to quit your job." And I said, "Absolutely not. Why would I quit my job? I'm making more money than these checks that were, you know, what they were receiving." That was just said. So then, you know, the realization of what sense does it make for a person to get off welfare if you can't actually earn for your family to create that stability to get off welfare, just like you did in the 96 welfare reform where you had a 2-year process or a 2-year track and a 5-year limit for those who were receiving benefits. And, you know, the benefits cliffed, if you will, which is for those that may be listening and may not know, this is the amount of money that you can potentially earn before it being cut off. So that cliff wasn't there in one time due to your reform, and you allow people to earn and, you know, create stability in their lives and then lift people out of poverty. That was, I think, an exceptionally well done program which helped millions of people. And I know that we need to get back there to help change the trajectory of our country.
As a further example of what a remarkable young man you were, by the time you're 18 years old, you decide you want to own property. And less than a year later, you buy a multi-unit apartment building. Walk us through this journey in your mind and in reality. What led you to decide you wanted to own property?
So interestingly enough, my pastor, I started going to a new church, and this was all on my own. I was really seeking God. I wanted to know the truth of God. And I grew up in a religious home, but it was a religious home that you didn't see the power. You didn't see the ramifications of what God could do. And I started going to this pastor. Many of your listeners will know who he is. His name is Dr. Bill Winston. He has a church in Forest Park, Illinois. And I mean, this guy is extraordinarily gifted in the message in which he delivers and the fact that you should be able to, when you're really connected with God, you should see that power change your life. It shouldn't be a religious, I go to church every Sunday, but nothing changes in your life. God's power is supposed to literally transform you. It should transform everything around you. And by way of virtually connecting with that, it transforms the people around you because they can see the results. So this pastor would tell us things like, you know, the government shouldn't be taking care of you. We shouldn't be on welfare. We shouldn't be on government assistance. God is supposed to take care of you. He'll give you a vision of what to do, and you'll do it and change your life. And he kept pumping that message in me and using the word of God itself that I all of a sudden wanted to go out and get involved in real estate. And it was a scripture that I used, Joshua 1:3, every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that have I given unto you. And I meditated on that word day and night, and I believed for a vision for real estate. And at that point at 19, I had some savings, good credit. Eventually, I figured out I had no credit at first, but then I used the word. I really got steps to what to do to put me in a place that I can own real estate. And I'll tell you, I had a realtor that I met with who ran my credit and said, oh, you have a zero credit score. And I said, oh, you know, what do I do to change it? I used the word. And I know it may sound crazy to people, but it really did help me. I transformed things in a short period of time. And then that's when I went out and I bought a multi-unit apartment building. And I was the first person in my family to ever do something like this. I was the youngest one. I didn't have any family assistance. They didn't have any fortunes or anything that they can give me. No one co-signed for me. It was all me. And I thank God for it every day because that was an example of what faith can do. And I know this isn't a faith podcast, it's a political one, but I think that there's someone that needs to hear that message. When you connect with God, he'll transform your whole life. And I really believe that, Newt.
What is it that they saw in you that would lead them to allow you to buy a multi-unit apartment building at 19?
Well, you know, we got the banks and those structures, but what they saw in me is less important than what I saw in myself. And what I saw in myself was a victor, not a victim. And what I saw in myself was somebody who has the propensity to be great and absolutely successful. And what I continue to see in myself is a bigger vision than anyone can see for me. And it's a vision that I got from God. And it's a vision that continues to sustain me. So ultimately, I think people will compare themselves to other people and say, oh, well, you know, we come from the same background. This person has this and I don't have that. No, focus on your own journey. Focus on what God is leading you to do and you do it. You can't be distracted by what's going on around you. You have to be laser focused in order to get to that next level. And that can be just in a very natural way. You're looking for a job, or you're looking for a college to go into, or you're looking for a partnership of some sorts. You got to focus in on your stuff, not what everyone else is doing. Because ultimately, what people tend to find out is when people seem like, you know, some folks, they seem like they're doing so fantastically, some of it ends up not even being true. You know, it's like, you know, people create this image for social media and then you find out, oh my God, none of that was actually true. That's why you got to stay laser focused on your race and your race alone.
So I want to come back to this for a second because I think your formula is frankly brilliant. When you talk to other people in situations that you recognize because you were once there, are you able to help them move from being a victim to being a victor in their own head? I think you're onto something that is so powerful and so important about how we turn this country around. And I'm just curious, do you actually talk to people about it? Do they get it?
Yes, I absolutely do. And, you know, I'm going to tell you, there's been a number of young folks that have reached out to me on social media, LinkedIn, and my social media on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook is at Gianno Caldwell, for those who may be interested, G-I-A-N-N-O Caldwell. And they'll say, hey, I read about your story in your book, Taken for Granted, How Conservatism Can Win Back the Americans, Liberalism Failed. Or I saw you on television, or I saw this article. This is what's going on with me. I need some advice. Now, those folks who are willing to reach out and say those things, they already have something in them that's a bit of hunger. They want to know that there's possibilities to change. They want to be inspired. And then there's some people that you meet who may have had a similar story to yours growing up, and they have no idea that it's even possible for them. So they got to connect with that energy and be around people of a level of success that they can see that it may be potentially possible for them. There's multiple kinds of people on this journey, but the person has to want it. They have to want what comes with that. They have to know that I'm going to have to do work to get here. That's why I think about every individual on this planet has this thing within them that I call hidden ability. We happen to call it generally potential. What does it take to realize potential? Work, productivity, following some kind of vision. You know, you can be following the formula of someone else and seeing what they did, or it may be something brand new. And what I really connect to and the people that really connect to me is those who recognize that they want it for themselves. They want to change their lives. They want to change their family lives, and they're willing to do whatever is necessary to do it. So those are really the people that connect with me and are able to be inspired and take those next steps for themselves.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if... No. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James.
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Given your views towards self-help, the work ethic, being positive, when you were first aware of politics, which party did you identify with and why?
Well, when I was first aware of politics, I identified with the Democratic Party because that was all that was in my community. So they made Republicans a big boogeyman. And if you're hearing the same things from your family, your external family, the teachers, the adults in a room, and you're a kid, what else are you supposed to believe? And of course, you don't have, you know, any Republicans around in many of these inner cities to give a different vision of what that looks like. And I recall as a teenager, at this point, I'm about 18 years old or so, I was having a conversation with an African-American gentleman on the corner, and we were talking about politics, and I mentioned a lot of untruths about the Republican Party. Some of the things that I've heard in my community, they're racist, they don't care about poor people, black people, etc. And this guy, who was a longtime Democrat, began to challenge me on my point of view. And I've never been challenged on my point of view when talking about Republicans, especially in those kind of communities. So he said things to me like, didn't you know the first Republicans in Congress were black conservatives? No, never heard that before. Did you know MLK was a Republican? No, never heard that before. And a number of other things. So whenever I'm challenged, I go research so I can have a stronger argument for later. And when I went home to research and I discovered the Republican Party was started in 1854 in opposition to the Kansas-Nebraska Act, which wanted to expand slavery. I mean, I almost really just dropped to the floor. I like, wait, this can't be true, because no one in my community has ever said anything like this. And then I did further research and I began to realize that I was a Republican. You know, these same values and belief systems that Republicans traditionally have, I had them myself. And then I became depressed because I said, well, how can I be like one of them? They say that they're racist. They hate all these people. So how could I be like them? So it took me probably about a couple of months, maybe 3 months, as I went through this state of depression, because everything that I saw began to make me realize more and more, I am a conservative. And then at that point, I said, well, forget it. I'm going to go out and I'm just going to, you know, let my truth speak. And I'm going to tell you, when I told my family, they said, yeah, you know, you just want to be white, or basically we don't consider you to be family anymore since you're going in this direction. And that's how Democrats often keep the black community in this trap. We're going to disown you. We're going to talk down on you. You're no longer welcome to the cookout, if you will. And it's been incredibly effective until the migrant crisis hit in Chicago. You know? Now things are shifting gears. And honestly, because of Donald Trump and his culture connection to the community, which he has had for many, many years, I think things are beginning to shift and look quite differently, not necessarily in the media, the left-leaning media, but internally in the black community. I believe things are shifting, big shift.
I noticed that one of your first really active roles as Republican was with the DuPage County Republicans and an African-American outreach program, and that you also had served as director of government relations for Naperville Township. You've proved you were a Republican because you actually lobbied for the reduction of the property tax rate for the whole township. This is a great success story.
Yes. So I got involved in DuPage County Republicans after reaching out to the Republican State Party chair on social media. And they connected me with them over there, which is where I was living at that particular time. And I'll tell you, my role, I've had a number of roles in the GOP. I was an elected precinct committeeman. I was the political action chair for the DuPage County Young Republicans. I was active with the Chicago Republicans. And DuPage County is a very important county, if you will. It was the second largest Republican county in the country, second only to Orange County at the time. And, you know, like a lot of these counties have flipped, of course. But these particular roles, which helped me inform my perspective even more about policy and how Republicans go out and engage supporters, et cetera. And I thought that there was a need for Republicans to really reach out to the black community in a meaningful way. And I'll tell you, no one has done that like Donald Trump has. Not a single one. And I know if we look at the polling right now, you'll see for this particular race, 2024, Donald Trump looks like he may get 30% of black men. Joe Biden's numbers are failing with the black community day in and day out. People are really upset with what's going on. But Donald Trump knows how to be in this particular community and build bridges. And it's my hope that, you know, once he wins his race for president, the Republicans will take close note and really build a bridge for black folks to join the party. There's a lot of conservative black people there. They just never called themselves Republicans. And they've never had Republicans go out and outreach to them in a meaningful way. That can shift with this election, Newt. That can shift in a very big way. And I'm going to tell you the truth. If it wasn't Donald Trump that was running, I'm not sure that we would necessarily see what we're seeing now in terms of the Black support that he's gaining. So Republicans should be looking at this very carefully, because we need to be able to maintain the party and be able to dominate in future races beyond Donald Trump's presidential run.
What are the characteristics of Trump that you think other Republicans don't quite have?
I mean, just being willing to go out there. When I was coming up in the party, folks didn't want to do outreach to the Black community because they were scared of being called a racist. That's really what it came down to. They didn't want to say anything wrong, so they just stuck with what they knew. But Donald Trump said in 2016, I mean, the schools are in trouble. You got crime everywhere. What do you have to lose? And it was such a true statement, even though many folks on the left said, hey, and in the media, well, if we get you, we got a lot to lose. Well, you got Joe Biden in office right now. See what you're losing. In the state of Illinois, you got $300 million that's been spent on migrants. For 2024, they're putting aside another $300 million. If they get more that comes in, this can quickly become a $1 billion issue. Meanwhile, you tell Black folks every election you have no resources to tackle their issues. 67 schools in the state of Illinois, including schools that are in Chicago, kids can't do math at proficient grade levels. 38 schools in the state of Illinois, kids can't read at proficient. Not one single student in these schools can read at proficient grade levels. That's a problem. They need resources to correct these issues. But more importantly, they need leadership that actually cares about them accomplishing it versus getting them dependent on a check so they can vote for them every year.
Given your remarkable background, you then went on to develop your own lobbying firm. How did that happen? I mean, Caldwell Strategic Consulting now is a freestanding company. How did you get to that point?
Well, interestingly enough, Newt, I went out to D.C. on the Mitt Romney campaign in 2012. That's when I left Chicago. And I worked on Capitol Hill, but I was a lobbyist before then. And I wanted to get involved in the federal lobbying space. But at that time, the Tea Party had took over Congress. Nothing was moving. There was no legislation that was really moving. I would meet with companies and they'd say, we love you. We love your experience. And I mean, my gosh, they loved the way I presented myself as well. But they say, we can't hire anybody because nothing's really moving in Congress right now. So what I ultimately had to decide is, do I go back to Chicago or do I go and stand still in what I set out to do? And at that point, I couldn't go back. I can't fail. I'm a big believer in what Thomas Edison has said. I've not failed. I found 10,000 ways it didn't work. I don't really believe in the concept of failure because I think you need to gain something from every perceived failure that make you stronger for the next attempt out, whatever that may look like. Or it may be a brand new path altogether that you didn't anticipate. So I decided that I was going to start my own lobbying firm, and I had met with many lobbyists before I made the jump just to get their advice because I'm a big believer in mentorship and asking for advice. And most of the people I met with, probably about 90% of them told me, don't do it. You won't be successful. One guy even was really upset. He's like, no one's going to hire you. No one cares about your Illinois experience. But I ultimately went out and did it. And our first client was a community hospital on the south side of Chicago. So it did work out. And I do public affairs work, get with corporations, trade associations, etc. And I've been very successful. I got hired by Fox News, a best-selling author, and I do many, many, many other things. So I feel incredibly blessed. And more importantly, I feel incredibly blessed that I never stopped believing, one in God or two in myself.
You mentioned Fox News, which is a fascinating story in itself. Walk us through how you ended up with a relationship there.
Well, interestingly enough, a very dear friend of mine who I got to know as I started going on and doing hits on Fox, at that time I would go on CNN as a Republican strategist. I asked the interview on Sirius XM because I was hosting Sirius XM for a host. I was guest hosting. And then we met. I went to New York and this person that used to work over at Fox, she brought me in, literally brought me into the network, and she became a peer mentor to me. And I'm exceptionally thankful for that time. I really and truly am. So that got me started at Fox News, and then it took on a life of his own doing appearances there. And one of the hosts at the network decided that he was going to put my name before the CEO, and that's how it really began. But it was a year and a half before I was hired, which is a pretty fast process for somebody who didn't have a big name. And I'm incredibly thankful to be able to go on to the number one platform in the country in cable and give my perspective on what's going on in the country. I'm thankful. I'm thankful for people like my mentor, Sean Hannity, who's a very dear friend I know to you as well, who will call and text me and just, hey, this is how I think you should handle this, or this is what I think you need to do here. It's really amazing to know that a kid from the South Side of Chicago who grew up in poverty with a mom addicted to crack cocaine, and she's now recovered, for those who are listening, but to have that kind of story and have made these kind of strides is really something out of a storybook. If people really knew my story and we wanted to do a movie after it, people wouldn't believe it because it's just been too many things that have happened for it to be real, you know?
Somebody may hear this podcast and decide, you know, I think I'm going to call him and see if we can't do the Jonah Caldwell story, which would be a very interesting movie.
Absolutely.
You testified about welfare reform. You make a very important distinction about two types of people who get welfare. Could you expand on that?
Yes, there's two types of people that I believe join the system. Is those who do it to get back on their feet. They don't have a choice. They only want to do it temporarily. Matter of fact, many people begrudgingly do it because they really don't want to be a part of any government assistance. They believe in themselves. They're independent. They're accountable. But they have to do it because they're trying to provide for their families while they're getting back on their feet. Then you got people who get on the system and they're trying to get every program that they can, and they want to manipulate it to stay on as long as they possibly can. And sometimes they don't even have a real need. They just want free money. They want free government money. And those people, honestly, they should be ashamed of themselves. If you're able-bodied, you're able to work, and you really don't have a need for it, you're just doing it because you want to be lazy and sit at home and watch television. That's why it's so important that there's legislative measures in place to ensure those who need the help can get it, and it's temporary unless they're disabled and they can't work, and those who want to manipulate the system, they can be quickly bounced off. I think those are important features for any legislative vehicle that may be used to advance welfare reform. There's a lot of families out there in need, and Biden has made sure that with Biden economics, you know, he's made sure that for many of the folks who they may have voted for him thinking their lives are going to be better and find out that they're far worse. Poor people really, really have been betrayed by Joe Biden because they're losing money left and right. And then you see the credit card debt that we have now over $1 trillion where people are trying to maintain their living, putting everything on a credit card. We're in a sad state of affairs in America, and Joe Biden is the cause for it. Remember Build Back Better?
Right. Didn't quite work out that way.
It's not been built, and it's worse.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty: Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how, I don't know where, I don't know what. God, if you show me, God, if you tell me, God, if, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what He says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I know it's personal and I know it's painful. But can you share with us your brother's murder and your reaction to it and what you think the rest of us should take from that terrible experience?
Well, thank you for asking me that question, Newt. On June 24th, 2022, my baby brother Christian was murdered on the south side of Chicago, literally standing outside of a venue on a Friday morning. Multiple people shot. He wasn't the target. The person that was the target ended up living, and they shot a young lady as well. They both lived. My innocent baby brother, Christian, he died. And since then, it's been a real fight for justice for him. One, trying to work with the Chicago police, who's completely overwhelmed. They need 2,000 officers to handle the current murder caseload. And they, first, it seemed like a blow off. And when I talked to him, oh, we got a lot of other cases. We really can't focus on it until they found out who I was on television. And then things seemed like it was going to move in a positive direction. But there's been so many things that have happened in between, whereas the Chicago police hadn't been able to really solve this tragedy. So after a certain period of time, I decided that I needed to try to enlist the FBI to get involved. And I, after a trip to Chicago for Fox News, I went out and I did a story. I decided that I was going to reach out to Burgess Owens, which I text Congressman Burgess Owens. I text him. And at that time, he sat on the Judiciary Committee. And I told him, I said, look, I want to get a bipartisan letter together that ask the FBI to come take over this case. During that time, I had no idea that the FBI had arrested, or rather had been involved, not necessarily due to my brother, but a guy who had the murder weapon on him was arrested. And a month later, the FBI got involved with him for some other things that he had going on. So I reached out to the FBI by calling them. I had current FBI agents call the Chicago field office. I couldn't get a return call at all. And then it wasn't until the FBI director appeared before Congress, and there was a member who was going to ask a question about my brother, but it didn't happen because of a back and forth. It wasn't until three committee chairmen put in letters for the record requesting information about my brother's case, that the murder investigation, that I get a call back from the special agent in charge of the Chicago field office. So I've been working with him on a monthly basis. We do calls to figure out what's going on. Have they charged anybody new? And, you know, what's the status of the case? In addition to that, because of what happened, I've been utilizing the Fox resources, thankful for our CEO, Suzanne Scott, who's allowed me to go out and interview family members who are victims of violent crime. I've been able to raise money for those families and really be able to pay it forward. And now, Newt, I'm launching something new here. I can't give too many details at this time, but I'm going to be the answer to George Soros. And that's what this really comes down to. The progressive prosecutors that he's been funding, city council members, mayors, and even beyond, allowing the country to really go into what many would consider to be a hellhole, where soft on crime prosecutors rule the day and victims are victimized day in and day out. And the people who commit the crimes, they get out the same day and pretend that it didn't happen and go out and victimize someone else. This needs to come to an end. And there needs to be a voice that can speak to this issue in a very personal way. And I intend to be that voice. I have done it already, but in a bigger way is what I'm working on right now. And I love to have your help in that fight as we're preparing to launch that fight.
Listen, I commend you for doing it. I'll do all I can to help. And I can tell you that the only way we're going to stop the current wave of violent crime is to have citizens stand up and do things like you're doing. And then, frankly, in the case of Chicago and elsewhere, hire enough policemen that you rebalance the system and get prosecutors who will lock up violent criminals. I mean, it's not complicated. It's just that the left hates it and they don't want to do it, even though we absolutely know what works and we absolutely know how to save an amazing number of lives. So I commend you once again as a citizen. You're showing real leadership. My heart goes out to you for the loss of your brother. And I think everybody who's listening would agree that that's a prayerful situation, a difficult situation. But as usual, you're taking it and turning it into an opportunity to lead and an opportunity to heal and potentially an opportunity to change Chicago for the better. So we'll do all we can to be helpful.
I really appreciate that. And if anyone has a story that they may need highlighted about a family member or just want to be supportive, please follow me on social media at Giano Caldwell, G-I-A-N-N-O, Caldwell, C-A-L-D-W-E-L-L. And that's on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And I really appreciate your support, your wisdom. You're one of the best there is, Newt, and I'm beyond thankful for that.
I'm delighted that you're as much of a public citizen as you are. And I want to thank you for joining me and sharing your personal story and your recent testimony about welfare reform. And I want to encourage our listeners to pick up a copy of your book, Taken for Granted, How Conservatism Can Win Back the Americans That Liberalism Failed, which is available on Amazon and in bookstores everywhere, and they can watch you regularly on Fox News. Thank you to my guest, Giano Caldwell. You can get a link to buy his book, Taken for Granted, How Conservatism Can Win Back the Americans That Liberalism Failed, on our show page at NewsWorld.com. NewsWorld is produced by Gingrich 360 and iHeartMedia. Our executive producer is Garnsey Sloan. Our researcher is Rachel Peterson. The artwork for the show was created by Steve Penley. Special thanks to the team at Gingrich 360. If you've been enjoying NewsWorld, I hope you'll go to Apple Podcasts and both rate us with 5 stars and give us a review so others can learn what it's all about. Right now, listeners of NewsWorld can sign up for my 3 free weekly columns at gingrich360.com/newsletter. I'm Newt Gingrich. This is NewsWorld.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.